On February 23, 2007, Grant Smith, director of research at IRMUP, appeared on the show Viewpoint with James Zogby to discuss the report Visa Denied, How Anti-Arab Visa Policies Destroy U.S. Exports, Jobs, and Higher Education. This report may be accessed on the internet simply by searching Arab Visa Denied.
Hi, I'm Maya Bear, and you're watching Viewpoint with Jim Zogby. Last month, the Institute for Research Middle Eastern Policy in Washington released a report entitled Visa Denied. The report argues that U.S. post-9/11 visa denials are harming U.S. exports, jobs, and higher education. Here to discuss the findings is Grant Smith, the Director of Research at the Institute. Grant, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
I want to first say thank you for doing this, because I know that there's a great deal that's been talked about with regards to this issue, but you really have done a very, very clear and definitive look at this.
Right.
And I want to start by just asking this question, not in order of importance, but one, because frankly, what I run into in terms of the work that I do, and that is students from the Arab world studying
sure.
in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as 9/11 hit, after 9/11, even fairly soon after 9/11, there was a discussion that this issue is a problem. And we saw, whether it was Great Britain or Australia, running ads and recruiting students from the Arab world that if you can't go to the U.S. anymore because you're not welcome there, here's an alternative. And I know that there was a great deal in the U.S. about not wanting that to be the case.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a bit on what you found, what's happened post 9/11 to where we are today.
Yeah, we found overall a massive fall off in all classes of visas, and I think the graphic that they'll be showing about that is pretty clear. That now there's a hole in time in terms of students who could have been in the U.S. studying, learning the American way, learning all sorts of things about the U.S. didn't come here. They went someplace else. From an economic standpoint, just looking at revenue per student, it represented about 9,000 jobs that were never created in the United States. And worse, some of the programs that were supposed to help out, such as the scholarship programs mm-hmm. that were supposed to fill in, didn't really do that. If you take a very close look, some of the visa numbers look okay. They look like they dropped and kind of recovered. But what we found in the research is that visa durations for study, in some cases, have been cut from 4 years to 6 months. Now, I don't know anyone who can do a four-year degree in 6 months. Surely some smart people can. And also a lot more people entering and leaving the U.S. on student visas going to a second country like Mexico or Canada to reapply for papers. If you look at the Institute for International Education figures, which are actually measuring bodies and seats, there was quite a fall off without recovery. Now, a lot of countries have tried to promote, working with the State Department, all sorts of scholarships and programs to recover, but basically, it's been very problematic.
Let me ask you, we've got a graphic this, which I think we're going to put up, but let me ask you, in 2001,
mm-hmm.
we were looking at 31,000 that
right.
were issued. 2002, we saw that number drop to approximately 20,000 and continue to drop 14,000, 12,000. What I want to ask you, because I'm the eternal optimist sometimes, is we did see a significant increase in 2005 and that it shifted back up to 20,000 plus going from 12. Is there something good starting to happen there, or is this some...
No, there is definitely a consciousness that that we need to be doing a lot more. There is a recovery, but what's worrisome is going forward, there always have been this five-year, this half lost decade of lost students that didn't come to the United States. I think getting back to the total figure also, it's about $2 billion in revenue if you want to think of it in hard economic terms. Again, the jobs matter. But what we're also finding is that the bigger picture in terms of having the U.S. share of each one of these economies in terms of their total import demand was steadily growing before 9/11. What we found in our research is that began to reverse around 2001, And when we began interviewing executives, some of them, many of them foreign students who used to talk about, my hometown is Portland, Oregon. That's where,
right,
I went to school.
Right. That's why I started with the question,
yeah,
of students, because
right,
everyone,
because
you
that
meet
connection
in the region, it's
exactly
like they want to talk about how the Indiana basketball team is doing, because that is their home school. And that's a major shift,
it's
particularly
at
a time when we're trying to talk about how do we engage the region better? How do we coordinate on these things?
Exactly. So people are saying, I can't go back to my hometown anymore. I don't know whether I'll be sending my kids. Probably not, that sort of thing. But again, getting back to the commerce part of it, we've found that the number one reason that industrial buyers who are buying machinery, who are buying large service contracts, entire turnkey projects, multi-million, in some case billion-dollar projects, are turning away from the United States because they can't be sure whether they'll be able to send people here for training. Mm. They can't make the necessary due diligence visits. We've managed to take it down to the state level in terms of the job impact. There's a graphic that the producer has about Texas and California, New York being some of the leading states. We wanted people to be aware because in many cases, legislators and even governors are remarkably blasé about not knowing or not paying attention to the job creation portion of their trade with the Arab world. And we wanted to make sure that was quantified to the last digit.
We'll come back to that in just a moment. If you are calling us from overseas and want to join in on the conversation, the number is 001-202-842-506. Here in the U.S., the number is 1-800-528-2090. Grant, you guys looked at a variety of areas.
Yes.
One of them is the student piece. Another is tourism dollars.
Yes.
How bad has that been post?
Tourism is a big fall off. If you look at the government's own figures, visitors from the Middle East, in particular the Gulf, stay longer and spend more money than any other visitor. We're talking about Europe, any place else. It's over $3,000, over 22 days in some cases. So that part is pretty easy to figure out. If you look at the trend line of visitors before and after 9/11 and compare what probably would have happened, just normal growth-wise, compared to what actually did happen, that's where we're getting the $2 billion and the 9,000 jobs. It just didn't happen. There were visits to Disney World that didn't happen, visits to New York that didn't happen. A scarier part of this, though, is in the visa process, people travel for pleasure and business. Mm-hmm. So within 100 people, who's also an industrial buyer who's going to refurbish the interior of aircraft? Well, we don't know. And
that's
what we know is that from some countries, there are buyers like that at every 100 entrants. And if you turn them all away or a significant portion, the opportunity cost raises to $1.9 million per person.
Wow. Has there been a similar upturn in the tourism visas, similar to what we've seen perhaps on the student front?
We're getting anecdotal evidence. This study only encompasses up to 2005. There has been an improvement, a slight improvement over 2005 figures for students and for tourists. The business part of it, we haven't been able to break out for 2006 yet. But the market has been exploding. This is talked about as a moribund market. Well, in 2000, total, the 22 market Arab League market, if you want to talk about it that way, imported about $170 billion worth of goods. It's on track to reach about $427 billion this year. And if the U.S. share is stagnant or declining because we're not letting people in to get to know products or for visits to Detroit to look at the latest models, et cetera, we're going to continue to lose those dollars.
Speaking of Detroit, let's take our first caller from Michigan. Good evening, caller.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks.
My name is Ahmed, and I'm from Durban, Michigan.
Hi, Ahmed.
And my question is to, my comment, actually, would be is, the Arab American that comes for the school in America and the tourism from the Middle East, they spend so much money over here. And President Bush, the way he's going about it in Iraq, is taking out all this money out of here, even the money for the oil. The Arab country is the best country, the most valuable source of money to the U.S.
Thank
and
you.
And he's voiding all the and thinking that he's going to do what he's going to do about what's up in his mind.
Thank you, caller. I think he's read your report.
It's online, so look for Visa Denied, you'll find it. But his point is interesting. Larger companies, to some extent, and this is a really crass thing to say, but their calculation may be, I can export microprocessors and PCs or smart bombs. I could sell foodstuffs through supermarkets or the KBR chuck wagon on the military base. There's a subsidy going on right now that's cushioned a lot of the Fortune 500, which is this deficit-financed war, which has made them perhaps not feel this as much as those smaller companies. 97% of exporters have less than 500 people in terms of the company size. They're definitely feeling it. But there is a feeling that up until now there has been a cushion for larger companies because all of this is dual-use technology, vehicles, food,
right,
et cetera.
Right. So is it possible that we're not going to hear more about this until those companies start to...
Well, some of those companies are beginning to talk in generalities. They don't want to go to this level,
right.
A lot of
right.
them, because it really doesn't look good. And to tell the truth, there aren't a lot of executives who want to go on record saying, gee, we could have done a lot better in terms of our sales in the Middle East.
Let's take another caller from Saudi Arabia. Hello, caller.
Yes. Hi. My question is, there were thousands of students... from Saudi Arabia, who are studying officially in the United States in the last 6-5 years, and some of them were deported, and some of them were barred from returning to the United States after they went on vacation. Mm-hmm. Has there been any changes recently in this regard?
Thank you, caller.
There are a lot of people in limbo. We've gotten numerous emails from people in Riyadh saying, here's what the embassy sent me. And it's just, your file's in a big dead file. You're in limbo. We're going to process your visa when we can. So there hasn't been a great deal of progress against the backlog. What we can say with a lot of certainty on this, on the same theme, is that the outsourcing that took place in Saudi Arabia before 9/11, the Visa Express program, where travel agencies were doing most of the interviewing and visa application reviews, was a disaster. And that's the kind of process which has caused a lot of this backlash. Three of the 9/11 hijackers came in on Visa Express-type visas, and the processing that did take place was scandalous. It was absolutely not acceptable. So what we're trying to do with this report is talk about spending enough money to do it right. Right now, there's one consular officer for every 4,000 applicants, which is clearly an overwhelming workload. But the State Department and DHS needs to know what is the opportunity cost before they can staff up and begin to do it right. Mm-hmm. And that's what this report's about.
Let's take another caller from Louisiana. Good evening, caller.
Hi, y'all. I just want to know if... it was a student or another person that was in the room with Mineta and Cheney when three times he instructed stand down, no planes up to defend the Pentagon from the onslaught of the attack.
Thank you, caller.
Don't know anything about that.
I was going to say, probably outside of your area.
Outside of the studies scope, I'm afraid.
I wanted to ask you, because it seems to me like one of the benchmarks of looking at why this is such a problem is the Dubai World ports bill.
Yes, absolutely. I mean,
it is the poster child of what's wrong with this.
It really is.
Tell us about what you found with regards to that and implications politically after.
Well, we've got a chapter of the stevedore really talking about what was happening on the ground in Miami with the stevedore that was so opposed to the Dubai Ports World takeover. It really had much more to do with competitive issues, not being paid, pricing. It had very little to do with national security at the end of the day. The Wall Street Journal has done some excellent reporting about how they whipped up this political storm so that suddenly Dubai Ports World was a national security issue as opposed to a plain vanilla, everyday merger acquisition takeover. So that has definitely poisoned the atmosphere quite a bit. United Arab Emirates is now our number one export destination. It's been the fastest growing. We could do a lot more if we didn't treat everyone as a suspect rather than a prospect.
Let's take another quick call. We'll come back to this issue from Virginia. Good evening, caller.
Good evening. Thank you for taking my phone call. Mm-hmm. I have two questions. One is about what percentage of the visas applied by Arabs are actually denied? And the second part of the question is, does the drop in the numbers of Arabs coming to the United States because of visa restriction, or is it because Arab aversion from coming to the United States?
Thank you, caller.
I'll take the last question first. Visa restriction becomes aversion because nobody likes rejection. So the two are intertwined, and hearsay and people hearing experiences of other people feeds into it as well. The second question is, we don't know. It's a secret. There is definitely some rejection going on, but there's an even bigger, as I mentioned, limbo pile where visas are neither being granted nor rejected. The process just goes on and on and on. I've got an email stream of a process that started 5 years ago, and there's never been a definite yes or no, but the gentleman has never received his visa either. Members of his family have, indicating a certain level of ignorance about the importance of traveling in a family to the United States. So I would say while we don't know what the rejection rate is because it's not publicly known, we do know that the limbo pile is getting very large.
Let's take another caller from Texas. Good evening, caller.
Yes, I've got a question. Mm-hmm. Why do we let Muslims into the country at all?
Okay. I don't know that we asked that question
Gosh,
with regards to religion.
Why not just keep them all out of the country? That's a remarkably ignorant question.
Let's go to New Jersey. Next question.
Yes, how are you doing? Thanks for taking my call. The comment I want to make really is, I know you guys looked at it from economic point of view and all of the other sides, but there's one side that we really miss in here is the brain drain. I mean, most of these people, when they come into the States, they are the smartest of the smartest over there in the Middle East, and when they come over here, this society would benefit a lot from that because most of them, they are in, you know, they work in very sensitive fields like chemistry, physics. You know, I know a lot of people, they're working with NASA, you know, things of that nature. Like,
right,
these people
right.
are the best of the best. So
Thank you very much, Carla. I'm sorry to cut you off. It's only because we have very limited time left.
No, he's right, and that's why we titled the chapter on student and education visas as losing our access to tomorrow's leaders. That's it's not the not filling classes economic
right.
costs at the
right.
end of the day. It's the opportunity costs of
Grant,
breaking these chains.
Very quickly, literally seconds, is anybody listening in terms of policymakers?
Oh, yes. First buyer, Department of Homeland Security.
It's very good to hear. Thank you very much for joining us today. We really appreciate having you, and thank you for doing it. That's all the time that we have today. Sorry we couldn't get all of your questions in. Please email your questions or comments to view@aaiusa.org. Thanks to our guests.